Welcome to Mormonland, Salt Lake Tribune's podcast. I'm Peggy Fletcher Stack, Tribune's senior religion writer, and I'm coming to you from Hanoi, Vietnam. Last year, the Vietnamese government recognized the LDS Church for the first time, and the church chose Louis Hassel as its first mission president. President Hassel is with me today. Welcome.
Thank you, Peggy. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So, President Hassel, how did you get involved in Vietnam?
Well, I first had a mission call as a young man to serve in Saigon.
What year was that?
That was in 1974. And so for 9 months of my mission, I served in Vietnam prior to the fall of Saigon. And then I finished my mission in Hong Kong.
How'd you feel when you were evacuated?
Well, that created a big hole in my heart, as it would with any missionary who loves the work they're doing and the people they're working with. And that created a great yearning to always want to come back.
Did you learn the language in that time?
Yes, rather remarkably, was given the gift of tongues in that nine-month period of work and effort. With a little bit of practice off and on in between then and now, I was able to maintain that gift as well.
After your mission, and did you finish in Hong Kong, as I understand it? After your mission, did you ever come back to Vietnam?
Well, beginning in 1989, I did have a number of opportunities to return to Vietnam in a medical capacity or in a volunteer service capacity. And so over the next 20 or the last 25 years, I've continued to make visits intermittently with those kind of purposes in mind, and also just a desire to keep my fingers in the culture and in the language.
So you're a physician. What kind of physician are you, and where are you from in the U.S.?
I'm a pathologist. Most recently, I've been practicing in Oklahoma at the University of Oklahoma.
And so in this recent go-around, how long have you been in Vietnam now, and under what capacity? I know you're mission president now, but you were here before that, correct?
Yes, we accepted a call to serve as a senior missionary couple in 2015. And that was after the initial interim recognition of the church had taken place. And we served for about 9 months before the mission started and were called then to serve as the mission president here.
What was it like? Was there some kind of ceremony when the church was officially recognized?
That recognition event occurred on May 31st in 2016, and that will be a very long remembered event by the members and many others here as well. It was featured visits by two apostles and a member of the 70, and a large number of members came to participate, as well as many friends and others from overseas.
So were there any members still here from 1975? I mean, when the mission opened here, was there a body of church members here that you could walk into as a mission president? Walk into, that's probably not the right term, but you know what I mean? In other words, what was the church like last year when it became recognized?
Well, the vast majority of the members who were baptized in 1974 and 75 were scattered and had left the country. There were one or two small remnants of that still around, either children or grandchildren sometimes. But by and large, the vast majority of the members of the church here either were converted in Cambodia and came back to Vietnam, or had joined the church since the church began operating on a small scale in 2005.
What other religions are here, and how are they treated?
Well, Vietnam has a very rich religious landscape. It both has several strains of Buddhism, has some Hindus, has some Muslims. Of course, Buddhism is the predominant belief system. But there's also a significant proportion of Catholics and some Protestants, some Seventh-day Adventists as well. And so the church is now on the same footing with those. We're officially the 14th religion in Vietnam. Vietnam is a very interesting place religiously, and many of the traditional beliefs that people have here largely relate around family and ancestors, and that's a very strong value for members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
So speak of ancestor worship, is that how we describe it? How does that relate to LDS views about family history and the eternity of the family? Is that one of the church's appeals to potential converts?
I'm not sure that it's an initial appeal, but it's certainly a very resonant value. I think the term we prefer is more like ancestor veneration. The translation of the term worship is, I think, a little bit confusing to people sometimes. But they believe in the eternity of a soul. Their ancestors continue to live as individuals, that they continue to be concerned about their children and posterity, and likewise that their children and posterity should be concerned about them, and that they can do things that influence their happiness and their success, their luck, if you will. And those are all values that have a great consonance with our beliefs in the eternity of the soul and the eternal nature of family relationships and how they should be.
What about the story of Joseph Smith, an American farm boy who restored the church? Is that a story that makes sense in a setting like this?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think the thing that makes sense to people is really the fact that there is a God in heaven that's very, very concerned with them as individuals, that knows their name, and that is cognizant of them. And that message does resonate to those who open their heart to receive it and consider it.
So what are the challenges that new converts in Vietnam face with their culture, with their families, with the society? Tell me some of the challenges they have if they join.
Well, I think that people who accept the gospel in any country face many of the same challenges. Family opposition, you know, conflicts with work and time schedules and so forth. So those are common challenges that people face. There are some, how would you say, maybe some additional coercive factors in society here at times, whether they be from an employer or even from a family that's very steeped in tradition that tend to control or direct decisions. And those can be very challenging because honoring parents and maintaining relationships in your family and in your employer are very, very important to people here. There's also a real drive for economic success. And so, you know, multiple members of the family working and time working, there isn't the same kind of five-day work week that you usually anticipate. It's 6 and 7 days a week. We hear construction workers in the middle of the night on Saturday night across from us, you know, building these skyscrapers that are building this city.
So obviously Vietnam was in a war with the U.S. for 30 years or so. Does the fact that the LDS Church is an American church, does that get in the way of missionary work, or are there lingering anti-American sentiments here?
Well, I think more and more the church is seen here as an international church rather than an American church. Certainly the missionaries or branch builders, as we call them, who serve here, come from many different backgrounds, including local missionaries from Australia, from England, Japan, other locations have served here. And do serve here, so it's not viewed as an American church, and we don't think it should be because it is an international church. In terms of sentiment about the war, I think by and large the Vietnamese people metabolized the experience of the war much differently than Americans did, and for them it became just a piece of their history. And by and large, with the post-war baby boom and retirement of various people at younger ages here than usual, it's all ancient history to them. And so they have viewed relationships with the West very positively. They look for economic growth. They actually admire many of the American presidents of late and appreciate some of their steps to normalize those kind of relationships and promote trade and those sorts of things. So from their standpoint, I think relationships with the U.S. are generally a much more positively seen thing than you might have anticipated. There's really no antipathy or or resentment about the war. In fact, I can recall one specific instance sitting in the living room of a family and noticing the picture of one of their relations up on the wall and asking, "So tell me the story of this gentleman." And he had been killed by a bomb, and but yet there was no sense of resentment or anything towards the war or us as being even remotely related to that. So I think they have moved past that in the sense of learning how to move forward in their country.
So in the U.S., there are several LDS missions that are Vietnamese-speaking missions, but in various states. Would those, the children potentially of those Vietnamese refugees, would they be good missionaries for you? I mean, how does that work? Some of them ostensibly probably speak Vietnamese, maybe in their homes.
Well, the diaspora of Vietnamese people from the war, or from even prior times, has been a remarkable strain in the history of how the gospel has re-entered this country, because it has made it much more possible for that to happen. People come as missionaries with understanding both of the gospel, but as well of Vietnamese culture. And so the vast majority of the missionaries who have served here as young people have been those with Vietnamese ancestry or Vietnamese backgrounds. And that is a great advantage to them, both personally as they then connect back to their cultural heritage and their ethnicity, but also to the church as it's built up here as being something that is not seen as foreign. It's something that people of their own ilk have adopted and seen fit to embrace.
So among your missionaries, you have a couple dozen or so missionaries. What percentage of them would have some kind of Vietnamese ethnicity, whether they're from here or from another place, but they have it in their heritage, as you say? Do you have a sense of that?
Oh, sure. I would say the vast majority of the missionaries who've been called to serve here have that kind of a background. Not very many of them have the language as part of that, but some do. And interestingly, we also have missionaries who have acquired the language through other means. For example, they have been adopted by Vietnamese parents. So we have one missionary whose mother is Vietnamese, and he's Caucasian, but he speaks very fluently. I have another whose father served a Vietnamese mission in one of those, Vietnamese-speaking mission in one of those other areas, and who spoke Vietnamese to his children. And the two of his boys now are serving in Vietnamese-speaking missions. So there are many ways that that language gift can be applied, but the cultural understanding oftentimes comes with that, because the language communicates a great deal of the culture in terms of its respect for people, the relationships that people hold with each other, and so forth.
Does the church face any particular governmental restrictions on its proselytizing or its efforts?
One of the great things about being here has been the very, very positive relationships that we've had with the Committee for Government for Religious Affairs here in the government, as well as with the public security people as well. And that's grown out of wonderful efforts on the part of leaders and members locally as well as internationally to cultivate those relationships. Relationships really matter here. And so by developing those relationships, you create trust, and that opens a lot of doors. That's not to say we're breaking the rules at all. You know, we're still following the rules, and that's because that's what creates the trust. Like any government institution, however, you know, there are rules and there are barriers that you have to cross over. So if you wanted to start a church in New Brunswick or whatever, you'd have to go through a certain amount of registration process, and we do that. But having built up the trust and the relationships with people at various levels in the government, we've been able to so far successfully work through those. Now, there's still many obstacles ahead, and we continue to work to smooth that process as we both learn how to do it better, as well as continue to cultivate those relationships as new leaders come in and so forth. But so far, it's working well.
So do your missionaries go door to door, or do they more do street contacting or talking to people on buses, or what are the kinds of ways they find potential converts?
A couple of key messages that I can think of here, and one is that Elder Holland said to us, you know, do it right from the beginning. And President Hinckley some time ago said, everyone who's done missionary work knows that there's a better way than going door to door or contacting people out of the cold. And so we've been experimenting with a number of those better ways, both out of necessity and also out of respect for the culture. This is not a culture where going door to door would be at all welcomed or even feasible. So we do many things to offer service to the community, to provide opportunities for members to bring friends, to introduce friends, to provide opportunities for investigators to bring friends, so that we meet people. This is a culture where people do talk a lot. They talk to each other. They enjoy sitting down to talk to each other, and they're very congenial and convivial in that way. And so as you come to meet people and talk with them in a natural way, whether that's on the street or in a cafe or at the church, these kind of topics come into the conversation, and that often leads you to others who are interested in like ways with the messages and the values that the gospel and the church have to offer.
So about how many members, about, do you have, how many branches? Is there a stake here yet, or are we just talking branches?
So the members here would like to think there's a temple here, of course, but and they may look forward to that with great anticipation and faithfulness as well. But the church is still very much at a beginning stage. We're focused in the two main cities, in Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh City. And in both cities, we now have a district organized. District is a precursor, of course, to a stake. And so we're working on developing the necessary membership to support the designation of a stake, but that's still a little ways off. But by and large, I think that the people are understanding the principles of the gospel and beginning to apply them in ways that will help them to get there quite expeditiously, I think.
Is there any problem for members leaving the country to go to a temple? And have some of the members here been married in a temple or been to a temple somewhere else? I'm not sure which the closest temple is, but is travel a problem at all?
Not at the present time. We have had regular trips to the Manila Temple. For most of the people, that's the least expensive option. And so each of the branches has people who have been endowed, oftentimes people who have been sealed and received those covenants. And the plans are now for many of the branches to make an annual trip, which is really wonderful. And with prices for airfare remaining low, they may be able to do that really on their own resources, by and large. Although one of the great, great blessings here has been the Temple Patron Assistance Fund that was wisely organized years ago and is now well-funded and can really help many members who otherwise would have no hope of that here in this country, especially if they come from some of the poorer rural areas.
So is the Perpetual Education Fund working here? Is it on the ground yet here?
Not in the sense of the loan program. So we haven't gone into the legal issues surrounding being a lending agency or anything of that sort. There is a similar program that offers grants, educational grants, and we've had just the very first few of those awarded, and people are working through the necessary processes to make that option available as well. That's a big key because we have a very young church population, and getting the education and training that they need that will enable them to be economically contributing to both their families as well as to the growth of the church is very, very important, very key at this stage.
So what are some of the biggest challenges the missionaries themselves face, and what kinds of challenges do you as their president face?
Well, our missionaries, of course, come from many different backgrounds, and the adjustment of becoming a missionary is hard anywhere you go. But in this culture, there's a lot of differences from home. And so for some, it's the language, big challenge, very challenging language, many different tones, totally different way of expressing emotions and inflections. That's a very hard melody for many missionaries to learn how to get that cadence and the melody of the language into their bones, so to speak. But they do eventually. But for some, it's a very long climb. And then for others, it's, you know, the humidity, the heat, the the weather's daunting, and torrential rains at times, and then hot sun at other times, and so forth. So there are many of those kinds of challenges. And then, of course, you put them in a missionary environment where many of their traditional coping experiences, you've taken them away, and with the missionary rules and so forth. But amazingly, they do adapt. One thing that we've found very interesting to see is that with the nature of the weather and so forth, we've actually instituted a nap in the middle of the day for them. And some of them just love it, and others are going like, I can't do this.
I can't. Maybe nap. Like kindergarten, huh?
Almost that way. Some of them say, can we get a little pad to put down in the church if we're there when it's nap time? But they have a lot of fun with it as well. They really do adapt well on the long term. But some, of course, face problems. Myself, for us, I think the biggest challenge is really knowing how to help them to reach their potential. I'm really grateful now for my experiences both as a scout and as a scout leader in seeing how some of those principles come into play in helping each companionship become a healthy, functioning companionship that learns to work together, to love each other, to be obedient and serve in the ways that they should. And that, you know, I think that experience probably was the greatest preparation for this job there could have been, was leading boys on a trek through Philmont or through some other difficult and challenging backpack trip.
Have you had any unexpected health problems, sickness? Unique? Are there some sicknesses that are unique to Vietnam that they're not going to face elsewhere?
Well, this is interesting because in this internet era, we sometimes learn about that from their parents who are monitoring all the tropical diseases. And so we've had occasion to reassure others that yes, that drug-resistant malaria is in Vietnam, but it's not where our missionaries are. On the other hand, you know, there are other diseases, mosquito-borne diseases like dengue and so forth, that are quite a problem for the general population, and our missionary population has been affected by that as well. But fortunately, no serious complications or anything of that sort to this point.
Do your missionaries use smartphones? We just saw a report out of church headquarters saying that in the future more missionaries will bring their own phones to their missions rather than using iPads or tablets or anything. Do your missionaries use smartphones?
We haven't been one of the early adopters of the technology steps forward for several reasons. One is primarily just to avoid being seen as a target or as a someone who is above the rest of the population. Probably 60 or 70% of our population in Vietnam now has smartphones. Everybody has a cell phone, but smartphones are becoming more prevalent. And so I think that in due time, probably smartphones will be adopted here, but that's just speculation.
So how do you see the future? What are you thinking about the future here? Optimistic? Overwhelmed? What are your thoughts?
Well, my dear friend Susan Gong, who is the wife of Elder Garrett Gong and was in the Asia Area Presidency, said when we were talking about this assignment, said, you'll have a front row for the evolution of one of the most exciting chapters in the history of the church. And in a way, that is absolutely true prophecy. This has been a very exciting period of time to be here. And there's a lot of really wonderful and very hopeful, optimistic things that are on the horizon. And I think the members here really feel that, and they feel like they have really gotten hold of something very, very wonderful, and that if they take good care of it, that it will prove to be that, not just for themselves, they feel that for their whole country. There's a great sense of love for their homeland and for the things that will happen here as they do that.
Thank you very much, President Hassel. This is Peggy Fletcher Stack coming from Hanoi, Vietnam, signing off of Mormonland, and I'll see you next week.